All right, everybody. Welcome to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Philip Drew, Administrator, your host. Our first guest today is Greg Perry. He's the most successful author of computer books in the entire world. He is also the author of a new book called Disabling America, The Unintended Consequences of the Government's Protection of the Handicapped. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Philip. It's an honor to be here.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate you coming on. This is a great book. I read it in the past two or three days here, and I was just thinking, you know, it's sort of a recurring theme throughout your book. You know, just the idea that if anything is wrong, that immediately the national government must step in to make it right. And, you know, like it says on the title of your book, it's the unintended consequences of the government making things right that actually make things worse.
Well, that's true. And the government trains people, families and the churches and people. The government trains us not to help each other, because they step in, and when the government becomes the father, then they don't need fathers anymore. When the government becomes your landlord, and they want to own all of the properties, then who needs private landlords anymore? And the government has come in and said, families, you don't have to take care of anybody in your family. We'll do it for you. We can do a better job. We can do it more efficiently. And, of course, they end up doing the exact opposite.
You say in your book that the American with Disabilities Act makes it harder on the handicapped. In what ways does it make it harder?
Well, let's say that you open up you had a small business in the 1990, whenever the ADA was passed, and maybe you had a small coffee shop, and you and your family ran it. And as any small business, you're struggling to get started and to pay the bills. And the government comes in and they take the ADA very seriously. They did not put the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, under the Health and Human Services or something like that. They put it directly under, one level under, the Department of Justice. So for 8 years, for example, Janet Reno had full control over the ADA. So they do take it very seriously. And they come in and they say that you will change every doorknob, light switch, toilet seat, toilet itself, every parking space in your company. You will widen all of your doors. You'll widen your aisles. You'll lower some counters. You'll raise other counters. You might spend $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. Now, Philip, I suggest that before that happened, if someone in a wheelchair wheeled up to a front door of any business in America, there is hardly any business owner in America or even in the world who would not be compassionate and want to go help that person, help them through the door, bring them a menu, just leave the order counter, leave other customers and say, look, what can I do for you? Can I bring you something? Anything you need, you just holler. But after that man or woman, that business owner, has spent $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 to make their shop equal, I suggest the next wheelchair person that comes up to their door, that business owner will look at that person with disdain and say, now you are equal. I was forced by the government to change everything in here so that you can get by on your own. I am not going to help you. As a matter of fact, I don't even really want you in here, but I know that I can't do much about that. And so the ADA has ended up increasing discrimination and the way people view the handicapped.
Well, but you just sound like a disgruntled small business owner. What do you know about being crippled?
Well, not much. If you don't, now everyone has disabilities in something. Some people can't play the guitar. Others can't walk very well. Whatever. I was born with only one leg and also with a total of three fingers that actually, not one of them works all that well. And so I know a little bit about what it's like to be different physically if you consider having only one leg different from most. And I am speaking out as a person who does not want to be helped by the government. I don't want to become a victim. I don't want to be told. And Philip, I am so glad that I was born and raised in an America before the ADA, because they would have pigeonholed me. They would have grabbed me in school because I was unfortunate enough to go to the government schools. And today, disabilities in the schools is big, big money. And they would have grabbed me and pigeonholed me and said, you can't do this without our help. And I'm not saying that everyone would take advantage of that situation, but I know myself, and I know the general depravity of man in general, and how we'll do anything the easy way if we're given a choice. And I would be a loser today if during my formative years that they had taken me into their programs and said, we will help you out. Today, the disabled, the handicapped, I prefer the term handicapped, the handicapped people would be better off morally and financially without the ADA.
Well, how do you differentiate between handicapped and disabled?
Well, actually, I say I like to prefer the term handicapped because it's more accurate. They can use terms such as disabled for far more things. There was a dentist who was arrested for fondling, molesting his patients in the chair, and he used as his defense, he and his attorney went to court and used as their defense the fact that he was disabled because he had a sexual compulsion, and they actually used the ADA as part of their defense. Now, that's ludicrous.
Did but it if work? That was he acquitted?
No. The thing about such cases often is they're not thrown out of court. They bottle up the court systems. They do make it to court. It's funny that whenever someone is charged with a crime and uses the ADA as their defense, they often are acquitted. This person was actually found guilty, which is just a random act that he was found guilty. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason in today's court systems. But let's say that his attorney had said, look, let's say that you're handicapped. Well, that would have been far more obvious that they were taking advantage of the ADA if they'd said handicapped. Whenever the ADA was passed, they had to come up with a huge number of victims to even get the law passed. So what they did, they counted everyone that you and I would normally think of as being handicapped, the blind and the deaf and the people in wheelchairs and people such as that. And they didn't have enough people to justify this, so they counted the number of Americans who were over the age of 65 and said, hey, let's toss this number in too. So they threw in the 35 million Americans who were over the age of 65 and called them disabled in order to come up with 43 million total so that they could get George Herbert Walker Bush Sr. to sign this act. And I would say that someone who's reached the age of 65 is the opposite of disabled. They've done pretty well, I think, and I hope I make it that long.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. And it's funny because since then they've added, beyond just old people, senior citizens, as George Carlin just taught us we're supposed to call them,
sure.
That now they've expanded the definition of disabled to include drug addicts and alcoholics and fat people and anything that you can imagine, right?
Anything that you can imagine. People with AIDS, people with sexual deviancies. They have tried to fit, and see, they had to use the term disabled in order to do that. They have to use a soft term like that. So, and they've actually tried to almost outlaw the term handicapped because actually it's an accurate term, so they don't like that. And the ADA police does not allow that term to be used in their publications and things like that generally. So they know the truth when they hear it. They just don't want the truth to be exposed.
You write quite a bit in your book about the culture of pity and how it used to be that the handicapped were admired for their accomplishments and that now you can get in trouble for admiring somebody.
You sure can. That's one of the ironies of this law. They say things like, in the ADA's own literature, their own rules, you cannot separate one group as being handicapped from another. But that's exactly what the ADA does. They require you to create separate parking spaces, separate entrances. Let's say that your business can't be changed. The front of your business can't be changed, so they say, well, you have to provide a back door or a side entrance for the people who need it, which is kind of interesting. Used to, the socialists in America and the left, they really love creating special entrances and special bathrooms for certain groups of people. They used to do that all the time in the 30s and 20s for African Americans, and now they really like separating out the handicapped people and making them feel different, making them wear this mark of a wheelchair sign everywhere they go, and in all of their cars have to be marked. They really seem to really like that sort of thing. But
they're bleeding heart types, and they just want to help.
Yeah, they just want to help, but they don't let you do that. See, you as a business owner, you're not allowed to ask if someone has a disability when you hire that person. And so if that person needs something special to do the job, they don't have to tell you that until after they're hired. And then you've got to foot the bill. And if you don't, they'll come back with an EEOC lawyer or an ADA attorney and make sure that you buy them whatever is needed. Now, if I need something for a job that I'm going to, I feel it's only right to tell that employer before I'm hired that, look, I'm going to need this to do this job. And if that person looks at me and looks at my record and thinks that I can bring enough value to that business to justify the extra expense, that's a wonderful thing. He or she would be a great employer. Or if they say, look, I'm just running too tight, you're not worth it to me in that I just can't afford the extra expense. Well, that's also great. You know, they made a decision. They knew up front the rules. We make a contract, or we don't. There's nothing wrong with that. And before the ADA, there were shopping malls and stores that started putting up wheelchair signs and parking spaces. But you didn't have the offensive feel that you have now when you know that you have to walk past 10 empty handicap spaces in a mall in order to get to the front door. And you know that was all regulated, required by law. And Philip, if you help a little old lady across the street, maybe she's pushing a walker, and you help her, that's a great thing. That's very compassionate. But if a policeman comes up and puts a gun to your head and says you will walk that lady across the street, that's coercion, and that can never, ever produce compassion.
Maybe you can tell some anecdotes, some good stories about abuses of the Americans with Disabilities Act by citizens, and also maybe just by bureaucrats who are taking things farther than the people complaining ever wanted it to go.
Well, sure, it happens constantly, and there was a story that's fairly popular actually in the ADA literature. I don't know why they're proud of it, but a restaurant in Texas was in a small college town, and they had a bustling business, started booming. They really catered to their clientele, and one of their people that worked in their kitchen developed AIDS and was around food and knives, and you know, he could very easily cut himself and the blood could get into the food or whatever. And the owner of this restaurant, and they employed maybe at most 20 people during a week, very busy time, but it was a small place. And this owner really liked the man and said, look, the only problem is you really shouldn't be in the kitchen working, because you could easily infect someone else. And also, being that your defenses are lowered, your physical defenses are lowered because of your disease, that you can get virtually anything and pass it on to the customers. And what we'd like to do is move you out of the kitchen and give you some other job. We will even raise your pay, because we know you want to be in the kitchen. We'll even give you a raise, and maybe you can make deliveries and work on our menus and things such as that. Well, the man left and came back with an ADA attorney, and the attorney said, no, he will work in your kitchen, because they really don't care about helping people. And I'm not saying the disabled, I'm saying the people behind the ADA don't really care about helping people. They only care about helping the ADA. It's almost as though the ADA is who is protected, not the handicapped themselves. And so if it means risking life of someone else to follow the ADA rules, well, that's no problem. That's not really what they care about. They care about you following the rules, because if you follow the rules, then their jobs are not at stake. They have a job. They can make sure you're enforcing the rules. They can keep making new rules. And so this man had to keep that chef in the kitchen. And the only problem with that is it was a small town, and everyone knew that occurred, and that man was in the kitchen fixing their food. And the business dropped so badly that the restaurant had to close. And so the result of that attorney's action, the ADA's action, the ADA's unintended consequences was many, many people are out of work, including that man who had AIDS. He didn't get his raise. He lost his job. So did everyone else. And a lot of restaurant goers lost one of their favorite places to eat in that small college town.
And the bureaucrat probably got a promotion.
They always win. The bureaucrats and also the attorney, anytime there's a lawsuit, you said something about earlier about how many are acquitted and how many win and how many are settled out of court. It doesn't really matter what the result is. Both attorneys always, always get paid, it seems as though. And so the people behind the ADA protect the ADA because it's their jobs at stake. And they don't care about the disabled. They don't care about the handicapped. It doesn't really matter what your views are on, say, right to life, but I will say that no ADA advocate has ever gone into an abortion mill, an abortion clinic, and stopped an abortion because the baby had Down syndrome. Or the reason that the abortion was about to take place was that the baby had spina bifida. No ADA advocate has ever been there. An ADA advocate was not down in Florida, if you'll remember the recent case with Terry Schiavo, the lady who was in a coma. That was her disability. She was in a coma, and because she was disabled, they wanted to kill her by stopping giving her food and water. And so because of her disability, they were going to murder her, in my opinion, but no ADA person was down there to stop that. They weren't down there saying, look, she's got physical problems, but you don't kill her because of that. However, Philip, if the parking spaces had been 3 inches too narrow, they would have shut that hospice down because they only care about the rules. They don't really care about helping the handicapped.
Well, and I guess that's to be expected with any bureaucracy that, you know, the government employee is just doing his job and making sure he gets his cost of living adjustment and you know, does as little as possible to get by and that kind of thing. But
Philip, I can't hear you. Hello?
Oh, you can't hear me?
No.
Can you hear me now?
I can now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
I forget. I need to really speak up on this little microphone. I was just going to say that government bureaucrats are, I think, probably in any agency going to act pretty much like you're talking about, where the rules matter and what they're supposedly there for doesn't really mean much in the end. They're just doing their job and making sure they get their cost of living adjustment at the end of the year.
Sure, just like in the public schools.
Yeah, but, I mean, truthfully, in 1990, when they passed this, there must have been good reason to pass it. I mean, weren't crippled people having a hard time in bathrooms that weren't equipped for them and no wheelchair ramps to get into stores and stuff? I mean, surely there was a valid reason for passing this law in the first place, even if it hasn't worked out quite like it should have.
It's interesting that if you look at the origins of the ADA, they really were not steeped in good intentions. It appears James Bovard writes a lot about this, and I think that you've had him on your show. He's a very wise man. He researched the history of the ADA for a book that he wrote one time, and he shows that they had a hard time finding disabled folks who would actually go to Washington and fight for the ADA to be passed. And they had a very difficult time turning us into victims when we didn't want to be victims, and we weren't perceived by the public. It was a big marketing sell. There was a slogan in the 50s and 60s that was called Hire the Handicapped, and it actually worked. People actually did do that. People would see a person who was, say, deaf or blind or disabled in some way, and they would apply for a job, and they would be able to do that particular job, and the employer would look at that person and say, look, this person has overcome adversities that we can only imagine, and so obviously they're trustworthy enough to give them a chance at this job because they've shown in the past that they have fortitude to overcome problems. I mean, what a better employee could I have than someone who has drive and motivation to overcome problems that pop up in life. So the handicapped were hired actually in great numbers. It turns out that there was about a 7 or 10 year period where the number of handicapped people employed versus the number unemployed and on the public dole, or public bob dole as I like to call it, the number of people who were handicapped actually started decreasing on the employment rolls, and it's a direct correlation to the amount of disability payments the government started giving out in the 50s and 60s. And the more money, I'm sorry, in the 60s and 70s, and the more money that they paid out in disability, guess what? the higher the unemployment rate became of the handicapped. So whenever the ADA was passed, there was about a seven-year period where they could look just at employment numbers and say, look, these folks are unemployed in great numbers, great percentages, and we need to do something about it. But the handicapped didn't want to be perceived as victims, but that was too bad. They went ahead and made them so. And the there's a very interesting statistic that whenever the ADA was passed, according to a group called the Center for Accessible Society, they're actually a very pro-ADA site on the web, and accessiblesociety.org, the Center for Accessible Society said that in 1990, 70% of people with disabilities were unemployed. And then they say, and that figure today in post-2002 remains the same. Well, I say, well, if there are still 70% unemployed, then the ADA has done absolutely nothing but cause grief for the disabled, for the able-bodied people, and it's increased discrimination against the disabled. I say get rid of it. It's done absolutely no good whatsoever.
You also say in your book that you know it will never be gotten rid of, that it's here to stay, and there's pretty much nothing we can do about it. So at least you
really
tell
is.
Us what's bad about it. But
yeah, well, people are afraid to talk about the ADA in negative terms because they don't want to be viewed at as though they don't like the handicapped. This book, actually, Disabling America, should have been written the year after the ADA was passed. But who would write a book like that? I mean, until there was a person, I guess, such as myself, who would be, by almost anyone's measure, handicapped, I guess. I've never really thought about that. But that's what other people would probably view me as. It would take someone like me to write such a book to show that, look, if I wanted to harm the handicapped, the first thing I would do is fight to strengthen the ADA. I would go to Washington and march and say, we want more ADA. That's what I, Greg Perry, would do if I wanted to hurt the handicapped. But I don't. I don't like this at all. I don't like this law. And I don't like what it's doing in the public school system. Of course, I don't like very much of what the public school system does anyway. But has it helped some people? Well, are there ramps where there wouldn't be if the government didn't put a gun to a business owner's head and said, you will install a ramp? Sure, that's true. There are ramps, and some people say, well, it's worth it. Isn't it worth it if it helps one person? And I say, look, if the cost destroys countless families, businesses, and even lives, if the cost destroys lives, and the ADA, I can give you evidence that it helps to destroy lives, I say, no, it's not worth it. The ramps and the wider doors. I say if a business A wants to have wider doors and ramps and business B doesn't, that is a great thing. Business B will have far fewer disabled folks get buying things from them, but then again, business A may not even be able to afford it. They might go out of business because they don't have enough people to justify that higher cost. But that's what the free market does. It very efficiently handles and answers problems as needed. It's not worth the cost to us. It's not worth the destruction that it's doing. It's not worth the discrimination to have a law such as the ADA. The ADA is a very evil law. It does the opposite of its intended effect.
You mentioned there about the ADA's effects in government schools, and that's something that you touch on in your book, this thing they call mainstreaming, where they bring in the most, quote, disabled kids and stick them right in class with everybody else. And I think you say in your book it doesn't really help them any, and it's actually a detriment to the kids who are in the class already.
Sure. It does. They even bring in bedridden patients into some public schools. Kids who are in bed, they can't even get out of bed. And they're there next to all of these regular kids, I would say normal kids, because the word normal is never, according to the ADA advocates, you're never supposed to use the word normal when talking about someone who's not disabled. So I try to use it quite a bit. And these bedridden kids are there. How embarrassing would that be? I can think back as a kid. How embarrassing would it be if you had a nurse wheel you into a public school classroom in a bed to be there with quote, normal students, that's a slap in your face. That's embarrassing. And the schools, again, the schools are so strange about disabilities. First of all, the more disabled kids they have, the more money they get. And so it's a very big business. And guess what, Philip? They have a whole lot of disabled kids. And the more money they get, the more disabled kids they find. They label children as disabled if they cannot read very well. And we saw a big push in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, moving away from phonics and into the whole language reading approach. That means that children cannot read as well as they used to because they don't learn to read phonetically. So they create their own income streams. They create these seven-year-old little profit generators because they don't really care about teaching them to read. They really don't. And they really only care about getting their numbers up. And a lady named Linda Schrock Taylor writes a lot about disabilities in the school system, and she has shown very clearly that whenever someone who does care, whenever there's a teacher who comes along, and by the way, I don't give a lot of slack to public school teachers, even the, quote, good ones. I think if they're part of the problem, they're part of the problem. But Linda Schrock Taylor says that every once in a while you will find a public school teacher who wants to get a disabled student out of such a program. And they are not allowed to do that. They're not allowed to leave. And it's obvious why. It's because of the money, because there will be less money given to that school system if they have fewer disabled kids, so they just don't graduate.
You know, it's interesting, though. You bring up eugenics and Margaret Sanger and that kind of thing in your book a little bit. And when I interviewed John Taylor Gatto, he explained how the special ed classes were actually created for eugenics purposes, that really they were trying to wash the bad genes down the drain. And if you keep all the crippled or stupid or whoever, however they are disabled, in a separate class, you're taking them out of the reproduction sweepstakes. No kid from the special class ever gets to date the cheerleader, right?
Oh, right. Oh, yes. They're always separated out and considered to be unusual and freaks.
Well, but you sound like you would prefer that they're separated out and that bringing them back into the class is the problem.
I would prefer that they be rescued from the government school system completely, actually. I'd prefer that normal kids be rescued from that system as well. But the schools do both. In one hand, they say we mainstream disabled students. We mainstream them into the regular classes. On the other hand, they create all these disability classes and special ed classes. And they do both at the same time, I think, so they can answer either critic. Whenever someone says, well, look, you separate out these kids, they can say, no, we mainstream them. And whenever they say whenever they're told mainstreaming doesn't work, they say, well, we've got all these special ed classes. And the way they do it is they will create special education classes and stick these students in there for part of the day. And then they'll stick students, the same students, in with normal students, say, for library or some other class that this person can generally at least appear to cope with or to function in. And they call that mainstreaming when they do that. So these kids are shuffled back and forth every day between a special ed classroom and a normal classroom. And the only conclusion I can draw from that is that they want to be able to answer critics from either side. My wife taught special ed in a government school system for a year and a half before I married her. And once we got married, she became my wife full time and wanted to do that, wanted to leave the system, which I was glad to see that. And the special ed students were mainstreamed even into, say, whenever parents would insist that they take tests, standardized tests, along with all the other kids. Well, that was fine as long as their test scores were not used in the school average. In other words, the school did not want their averages to come down and to look bad because the parents of the other kids would think, well, this isn't a very good school. So they had the freedom to actually separate out test scores or give special ed kids special tests during standardized tests just to ensure that their scores were not lumped in with the overall school scores and brought them down.
Sounds
so
like
they manipulate
mean.
And use these little kids. I think that's horrible.
Yeah, it sounds like discrimination over here.
Yeah, well, that's what the ADA is. It is the discriminatory law. I think the most discriminatory of any of it I've ever heard of. Getting back to one thing that you had asked about is it worth it for ramps? And I was thinking about the bedridden kids in the school being wheeled in through these special doors that they probably have to be wheeled in and back or something in order to get through the doors. You know, the ADA says that it wants to make people equal, but it really doesn't. For instance, people who are in beds, wheeled beds that are moved around in their beds, they can't get into Walmart or some businesses. Maybe they can Walmart, actually. I use that as an example. But some restaurant, the doors were widened for a wheelchair, but the ADA doesn't say those doors have to be wide enough for people in beds. And so it really doesn't make everybody equal, but you can't make everyone equal. That's the whole point. If you pass laws to try to make everyone equal, then you have one of two places. You have the Soviet Union, or you have jail, because only in jail are people really equal. You cannot make society equal. You will simply hurt folks whenever you try to do that. I almost hate to bring that up because I wouldn't want the ADA to hear this and say, maybe we ought to require every door to be wide enough for a bed.
Yeah.
But did you know that round doorknobs are illegal in the United States of America?
No, I didn't know that. Well, is that for businesses or for private homes too?
It's coming to a home near you, but it's illegal right now in businesses. The ADA said you'll remove all of your round doorknobs and replace them with those levered doorknobs or some other type of door opening. And, Philip, I prefer the levered doorknobs. I really like them. They're a lot easier for me to handle. If I've got something in one arm, I'm really glad when I run across a door that's not round, doorknob that's not round. But, you know, how amazing that Americans, that we have let our government pass a law that says we cannot put round doorknobs, we can't keep round doorknobs that are on our own business right now. And it's coming to a home near you. Philip, there are neighborhoods in the United States of America now whose building codes and neighborhood codes are being changed over to be ADA compliant. And that's becoming a requirement in those neighborhoods.
Beginning in Northern California, right?
Beginning in Northern California.
Oh, we're all, man. I can see that tidal wave spreading this way. So what
of
does that
course.
Mean? We'll all have to have wheelchair ramps to our house?
I guess so. I guess they won't be happy until half your parking, your driveway, is painted with a big wheelchair sign. I can't wait for that to happen in my house because I won't do it. And it will be really ironic, won't it, whenever they make me change my round doorknobs to levered and I say I'm not going to do it. And so they put me in jail for refusing to obey the ADA in my own home. I almost look forward to that day. It will be almost as fun as gun owners who are handicapped and have problems, who are finally able to sue the anti-gun people because of the trigger lock laws, if those ever pass. That will be an interesting time to pit one government agency against another, because folks who are disabled, we have a harder time defending ourselves than people who are normal. Wouldn't you assume that's probably true?
Sure, that makes sense.
You know, I can't make a fist. More difficult for me to fight back, although I can sure kick pretty hard. But if the ADA really wanted to make disabled people more normal or more equal, they would require that every one of us carry a gun with us at all times. Because if we're attacked, we have a much more likely chance of being able to defend ourselves. So if America ever passes the dreaded trigger lock laws that requires a trigger lock on every handgun in every home, then I look forward to people going after that law, using the ADA as their defense, stating, look, this discriminates against folks who are physically impaired in their hands.
Wow.
Because it will take us a whole lot longer to unlock our gun locks than it will normal folks.
I wonder which side would win. I mean, the political correctness on both sides is so overwhelming.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the lawyers will win. There's no doubt that middle
yeah.
lawyers. But who cares? I mean, as long as one of those sides loses, that's great.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, I want to introduce you again one more time to Greg Perry. He is the most successful author of books about computers and how to program them on the entire planet Earth. And he's also the author of Disabling America, The Unintended Consequences of the Government's Protection of the Handicapped. Thanks so much for coming on the show today. This has been good.
It's really been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
And some of his stuff is just silly. We all know that. Like on the airlines, they say they want a pre-board. Well, what the hell is pre-board? What does that mean? To get on before you get on? They say they're going to pre-board those passengers in need of special assistance. Cripples! Simple, honest, direct language. There's no shame attached to the word cripple that I can find in any dictionary. No shame attached to it. In fact, it's a word used in Bible translations. Jesus healed the cripples. Doesn't take seven words to describe that condition. But we don't have any cripples in this country anymore. We have the physically challenged. Is that a grotesque enough evasion for you? How about differently abled? I've heard them called that, differently abled. You can't even call these people handicapped anymore. They'll say, we're not handicapped. We're handicapable. These poor people have been bullshitted by the system into believing that if you change the name of the condition, somehow you'll change the condition. Well, hey, cousin, doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. We have no more deaf people in this country. Hearing impaired. No one's blind anymore, partially sighted or visually impaired. We have no more stupid people. Everybody has a learning disorder. Or he's minimally exceptional. How would you like to be told that about your child? He's minimally exceptional. Oh, thank God for that. Psychologists actually have started calling ugly people those with severe appearance deficits. It's getting so bad that any day now I expect to hear a rape victim referred to as an unwilling sperm recipient. And we have no more old people in this country. No more old people. We shipped them all away. And we brought in these senior citizens. Isn't that a typically American 20th century phrase?